I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show. Powered by Sports Interaction, Canada's Sportsbook.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
CJ, what is all the hand gestures and the scary? Are you okay? Are you in distress? What is this?
We're coming out of the long weekend with some energy, bro.
I'm just scared with the hand gestures, the scatterbrained. That's like what you do if like you're in a moment of distress and you need help, like you're trying to exit some door. The door will open it for you.
No, that's a clear brain, just ready to get at a new week kind of vibe I'm putting out.
If you say so, CJ. We have a lot to get to on this Tuesday edition because we decided to take holiday Monday off. Hopefully your weekend was as good as mine.
It was excellent. I didn't have to do too much work. Watched some hockey, of course, which I guess counts as work, which is a blessing in itself. And enjoyed some good weather here in Toronto, so life's good. Didn't get up to anything too exciting, but it was a great time.
You're safe, right? I mean, as I know in Ontario and even Quebec, the last few days, a series of storms were passing through. And I know some people in different parts of those provinces are without power. I don't think it affected Toronto at all, right?
No, I mean, there's definitely some downed trees here and the like, because we had a pretty crazy storm that came out of nowhere. I was actually out for a run, of all things, and my phone started going off. There was an emergency alert that said, like, whatever, crazy thunderstorms coming. So I cut it short and got back home before the rain started and was glad I wasn't outside when it hit. But yeah, I know Ottawa area, I think they've lost power. There's some tornadoes and the like. So hope everyone out there that's listening was not too affected. And yeah, it wasn't so bad here in Toronto.
Yeah, I know in parts of Quebec too, we were dealing with some of those storms. In Montreal, we weren't as badly affected as other parts of the province. So yeah, good on you for mentioning that. We need to just give a thought out to people who are kind of dealing with some rough times right now. The lack of power, debris falling, hopefully if you're able to listen to this podcast, we're able to provide you some comfort just forgetting about the last few days. Let's talk about one of these games. One game in particular, really been on my mind just because of the events that have been surrounding it. One series, I should say, the Blues Avalanche series, unless you wanted to add something. I wasn't sure if you're going to add something there.
No. Let's get into the Nazem Kadri, man.
Let's do it, because this story that's the most captivating, I think, of all the ones of the last few days. We know about the incident with Jordan Binnington, him and Callie Rosen colliding, and that leads to Binnington getting hurt. A water bottle was thrown, and threats are thrown at Nazem Kadri's way. And then he goes out in game 4 and scores a hat trick. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff that comes out of that as well. But I'd love to know your thoughts on how this Blues Avalanche series has played out to this point.
Well, I think if you're scripting this whole thing, like, no way does Nazem Kadri get a hat trick in game 4. And yet there he was doing that. Like, you'd almost think that's too surreal, just given how central to the plot he's been. Look, I don't really understand what's gone on here. I mean, look, there's two ways we're going to come at this. There's the hockey side and obviously the crap he's facing off ice, which is, it's sort of connected, but not really connected. But if we just deal with the hockey side initially, like, I don't know why the Blues are so mad at him. Like, the collision with Binnington, to me, just looks incidental. Lots of, every team at this time of year talks about, like, getting around the net, making life difficult on the goaltender. That is part of it. It's unfortunate that Jordan Binnington was knocked out of the series on that play. But, the fact they're bringing up his reputation and all this stuff, like, I don't really get that. And, obviously Kadri was suspended for the hit on Justin Falk in last year's playoffs. He fought twice this season in games against the Blues, sort of answering the bell or whatever you want to call that. So I just wonder how much longer he needs to go, because, he was a total distraction for them in game 4, not just the goals. I mean, they're chasing around the ice, taking penalties, and he's scoring on those plays. I love seeing his reaction. Doesn't surprise me at all, knowing him a little bit from, covering him here in his time in Toronto. Always was a guy that whenever there's noise around him, or, I thought that's what made him really good in a Canadian market, frankly, is he could rise above whatever the issue of the day was. If he was, being discussed in negative ways. And let's face it, at one point he was suspended by the Leafs because he missed a practice. He was late and missed games. Like quite often he was in the middle of, you know, this is in his much younger years, he was in the middle of stories where, you know, the media was kind of going nuts, and he could always, you know, do a good job of finding what he does needs to do to perform. And so, you know, I think that's great. And then, you know, the other stuff is just crap. I mean, I realize Nazem Kadri faces that every day of his life to some degree, or he's dealt with things like this in the past, but people filling his mentions with Islamophobia and, you know, comments on his race and why did you come to America and all this stuff. I mean, that obviously we don't stand for that. We don't stand by and say, accept that, and no one should. But yeah, there's a lot going on in that series. There's a lot going on with Nazem Kadri. And I do think in a certain way, when he becomes the villain, when another team and another fan base is booing him and all that stuff, like you see the best out of him. And the issue for him hasn't been performing in the playoffs. It's been staying in the playoffs, right? When he's not getting suspended, he's consistently put up points in the playoffs. And, you know, he's a big reason why the Avalanche are one win away from the Western Conference final.
Yeah. Like, seeing David Perron and Pavel Buchnevich go at Nazem Kadri unhinged. I mean, after the second goal Kadri scores, Perron misses throwing an elbow. Like, I use the word unhinged. That's basically what it looked like. They were targeting him. Like, it was really unbelievable to just kind of watch in the moment that the Blues would be so focused on Nazem Kadri to the point that they were essentially attempting to injure him. Like, that was just incredible to me for a play that was not his fault. It was not his fault.
Well, they completely lost their composure, you know, and
absolutely.
Remember, we have to separate this from the stuff that's happened in the past. Like, Kadri threw dirty hits that got him suspended those other times. I mean, the hit on Falk is late. The DeBrusque hit where he basically cross checks him in the face, you know, like stuff like that. If that had happened right immediately preceding this, I would understand to some degree maybe why you're losing your mind on the other bench. I don't see it with the Binnington play. And maybe it's just the same guy. You know, I think the beauty about Kadri, you really can't get to him. Like, I think you could say anything to that guy, and he's got such mental strength and such belief in himself that you're not going to shake him from his game. And he doesn't back down from anything. Like, you see fans giving him the middle finger, and he's just staring them down. Like, I mean, really, it's great theater. That was a tour de force performance. Like, I think that'll go down as one of the best games of his career. And I still got a long career ahead, and he's had some great games in the past, but you know, just the way he almost single-handedly undid the other team, it's such an important game. I mean, the Blues are up 1-0 in that game, right? They're on home ice. They got a chance to even a series. Most of us didn't give them much of a chance to win. And in some ways they beat themselves there, and they let Nazem Kadri beat them. And so, you know, I don't know how they refocus for game five, if this will continue, if they're going to keep trying to target him, but it looked pretty evident that that was what was going on in game four. And fortunately they didn't, you know, Perron didn't land that elbow. That would have been an ugly, ugly incident. It would have been a long suspension coming after a goal to a defenseless player who's celebrating his goal. I mean, that could have been a really bad suspension had he connected. And so I'm glad for Kadri's sake that didn't happen. And even for David Perron's, because, you know, it's not really typical of how I view him as a player, but clearly in the moment, the Blues were just melting down.
Is Perron's gesture, the missed elbow, is that enough to be considered or worth to be reviewed by the league in any way?
I'm sure they'll look at it, but I don't know. Like, look, at the video sort of speaks for itself, but the problem is he doesn't connect. Maybe he argues he was trying to throw a hit, and that's sort of the follow through because he missed him. Like, he's, you know, he's trying to hit and he goes into air. Like, I just don't see that resulting in a suspension or anything. I can understand why you might call for that, though. I mean, it looks like intent. Intent's the hardest part of their job, player safety, because it is a fast sport. And I do think a lot of hits that end up being illegal, that the player throwing them is actually not trying to do something illegal. It's just, it's a fast game. And if you can be a bit late and it happens. And so intent is hard to know in that moment. But yeah, it didn't look good, but I would think he'll be playing game five and we'll see. Again, I don't, you know, Kadri's someone who will fight. He'll throw a check. Like, he's not someone who will be that all of this stuff will not get him off his game. He's not going to, you know, crawl into a corner and be small in the game. And so, yeah, I don't think that hit or attempted elbow, whatever it was, is going to result in much from player safety.
The strangest thing about that play, or at least the misplay and all the other shenanigans that came as a result of it from David Perron, is the fact that when the threats that went around to Nazem Kadri went around, Perron was essentially the only person from the Blues who tried to say something. And I can understand if you feel the statement that he put out, essentially saying we're just going to move on from it, could be pretty much a nothing burger. But the fact that he was the only one who really kind of said anything about it, and he's arguably the biggest, I guess, disturber as a result for the Blues when it comes to attacking Kadri, that was very interesting to me. That, I mean, at least he said something, as opposed to Craig Berube, who opted to say no comment, which I think it's downright disappointing at this point. It's very easy for you to just say, we don't stand for that. It's not something that we want to see. You know that it's not representative of all your fans, so it's easy for you to go out and say something. So the fact that Craig Berube did not comment on that, I thought that was very disappointing.
Fair. I mean, two issues there, right? Perron, look, I don't know what was said on the ice. We have to remember, this is a very emotional game at its heart. And, you know, people do lose themselves at times, I think, in the playoff atmosphere. It's loud. Again, maybe something happens behind the play that the cameras don't pick up. Maybe something said. Like, I don't know all that happened on the ice in that game. And so I view his reaction to Kadri, you know, I think you can separate it. You can separate that he was one of the guys that came out and at least addressed the off-ice stuff, you know, ahead of time, and still have on the ice where he's chasing Kadri around. You know, it doesn't, you know, that's why it's such a, it's a fine line here, the way we discuss this, but I think that it's just possible. He's just pissed off in the game. He lost his composure. He's sees his team's season potentially slipping down the drain. You know, Perron's had such a great year. He's trying to do anything maybe to spark his team. I don't think that we would agree with the method chosen here, especially had he connected with an elbow. But, you know, I think that that's probably what's going on there. That's my best guess. You know, that's for the off-ice thing. I'm with you. Craig Berube, there was definitely an opportunity to say the bare minimum. You know, I remember years ago, I covered that Canadiens-Bruins playoff series, and P.K. Subban scored in overtime, and there was, you know, he faced a lot of the similar kind of sentiments on Twitter or what have you, on social media. And the Bruins actually put out a statement from Cam Neely before the next game, you know, basically saying, we don't tolerate this. You know, we're in a battle on the ice. You know, we're going to compete like hell on the ice, but let's have some respect. This isn't what we stand for as a community, as a fan base, as a city. You know, I think all those things could easily have been said by Berube in that moment, and it would have looked a little better. But yeah, just because Perron puts out a statement, I guess it doesn't mean that we should be surprised to see him get frustrated on the ice, because that's where the competition's happening. And let's face it, Kadri was playing 3D chess, it looked like, against the Blues in that game. He was beating them in their minds, beating them on the ice, and beating them on the score sheet.
Is that not a sign of growth? You referenced the fact that he has that reputation that precedes him because he has had incidents in the playoffs before, obviously, that has led him to being suspended. And instead of putting himself in a situation where he could fight back and possibly cost his team a penalty and games in the playoffs, he goes out and has his first ever Stanley Cup playoff hat trick. Like, is that not growth from Nazem Kadri?
That's why I think you heard so many of the Avalanche players use the word proud or pride. Like, they were proud of that effort, because I think they could understand how hard it would be to keep your own emotions maybe in check, you know, being such a focal point of a game, be it from the fans and from the other team, and not to retaliate or do anything dumb. And you know, if you look at Kadri's suspensions, actually, they've rarely been what I would call selfish plays. They're definitely stupid plays, not defending them. But they were plays, you know, in the case of the DeBrusque one, I remember Patrick Marleau had taken a big hit, and he's going there to defend his teammate. Again, don't agree with the method chosen, and he paid a big price for it. But he's, you know, he's done those plays in the moment, usually trying to defend a teammate, trying to stand up, maybe sort of what David Perron might have felt like he was trying to do there. You know, but he's not been a player that he doesn't snap usually for personal things. I think it's usually in is in light of the team, we've seen him lose his composure. But you know, that was an ultimate team kind of game from Kadri, because he wasn't the one doing anything to put the Avalanche at risk. And obviously, you know, came up with some big points there to help pull them through, you know, a game that they were trailing at one point. So I think it is growth, but, you know, I also have to say it's still early. This is a player with three significant suspensions in past playoffs. And so I'm not going to come out and say, oh, he's totally put it behind him. You know, I think he still has to continue to show it. He knows that. I saw he had a great Players Tribune piece, if you saw it, Julian, at the start of the playoffs, and he addressed head on that he feels he's got to change his reputation. He's got to earn back some belief in himself. I think he's starting to do that, of course, with this playoffs. But you know, it's going to be another emotional game in game five. And if they move on, there'll be more of this. So, you know, he's got to show it again and again and again, I think, before we can be sort of sure that it's all in the past for him.
Yeah. Well, at the very least now he's shown it. And I mean, you can get all you want about, you know, it's good for you to goon it up and get all that retribution fighting, whatever. The best revenge when it comes to professional sports is scoring, and Nazem Kadri getting that hat trick. That is the best way to get back at all the haters that have been at him over the last few days and the St. Louis Blues. I think the fact that he was able to do that and doing the celebration, I know some people were pretty critical about that. Come on, man. Like, what do you want him to do? Ron McLean, I don't think, was happy about that celebration. I disagree completely with that. Like, putting the hand over the ear, let him hear it. Let him do that. If you're going to go out there, you're going to score, own that. Like, I don't have any issue with him celebrating at all. I know you kind of mentioned that too, but I really want to focus on that as well.
Well, he spent 2 days taking a whole bunch of shit. I mean, yes. I would say generally you don't want to provoke the other team by being too, you know, with certain celebrations, especially in a playoff series. Like, you don't really want to poke the other team. Like, Kadri himself spoke after the game about how Berube's comments were bulletin board material. Well, sometimes the celebration could be bulletin board material for the team. I think it's in the context of what's gone on here, though, that's irrelevant. And he's being booed in that building for two straight games. You know, as I say, I think he's answered the bell in every way, like, for whatever happened in last year's playoffs, you know, by fighting a couple times, like whatever this code is, if it still exists in the game, I feel like he's done everything you can ask, and then he scores a goal. So let him have his moment. I got no problem with that. I get that sometimes a celebration can be seen as showing up an opponent, but in this case, I mean, this guy, he earned the right to do whatever he wanted there, and he celebrated the next two goals as well.
Yeah, I think just off of how he performed yesterday and putting everything behind him, I know you're saying it's early and there's still a lot of racetrack to run the postseason. You know, if something happens, I would be very stunned if we saw Nazem Kadri get himself in trouble, as we've seen before. I understand he has that in the past, but I'd be very stunned at this point. He knows there's a better option. One last thing, though. The water bottle throw. Because that caused a lot of furor on social media. So Kadri, after game three, does the interview and we hear the sound of a water bottle being thrown. There's a photo of it taken by, I think, Tariq El-Bashir, Peter Baugh, also from The Athletic, on top of that as well. What did you think of the Jordan Binnington water bottle throw that was made?
Yeah, it's like we had the detective El-Bashir on the case there. I love the
yes.
I love it, putting like a picture. This was the bottle, like, you know, it was this brand of bottle.
It was here.
We're getting it fingerprinted now. Well, it's not very classy. You can't have that, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's relatively harmless. I'm not saying we should have that ever happen, but it was relatively harmless given some of the things that happen in a pretty violent sport. So can't have that, shouldn't do that. But look, it's the playoffs too. I mean, part of what we love about the playoffs is it's like you put a series in a water bottle and you shake it around and there's all this tension and there's all this like frantic energy, frenetic stuff going on. I mean, that's part of why we're watching, frankly. And so that's how I can understand it, right? Jordan Binnington's frustrated. He's suffered this injury, whatever, Kadri's in his brain. But yeah, like I don't like the water bottle throw. I should be clear. It's just, I think in the grand scheme of things, trying to elbow a guy in the head who doesn't see it is actually much worse than lobbing a water bottle in his general direction.
I think the water bottle move is just childish. Like,
sure.
Yeah. Like, Nazem Kadri's in the middle of doing an interview. He's obviously not focusing on you, not even looking at you. And then you decide to be the tough guy and throw a water bottle in his direction. I think that's a joke move. It's an absolute joke move. I understand you could be upset about how that play unfolded, but to think, all right, my way of getting back at you is throwing a water ball at you? Like, what?
Yes, it is childish. I mean, look at it. That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't see anyone defending the water bottle throw. I mean, it's so clearly silly and stupid, but I do think on the scale of what could happen still in this series or what's already happened, it's going to be down the list. Cause if they're physically targeting him on the ice that in a way that's illegal, that, you know, that's way worse than, again, throwing a water bottle that didn't even hit him.
Anyway,
if you're Kadri though, and you see that, you know, you're in their minds, right? Like the flip side of this is, you know, cause he's part of what Nazem Kadri's game is he's a shit disturber. You know, he's an agitator and he knows mentally he's got them where he wants them. And look, that's probably a great spot for him to be in. He probably loved the water bottle when he had a moment to like think about it. Just like he knows he's getting to them.
Exactly. Also, you managed to say shit disturber. And I tried to censor myself earlier when I told myself I wasn't going to say shit disturber and you said it. So I love
the fact that I've had two swears on this pod already. So I don't know if we're doing over under on my swears, but I'm a little high so far today.
Yeah, I don't know if Sports Interaction covers swears on CJ Show or SDPN podcast. Maybe that's something we could ask David Bastel. Maybe when he's on Thursday or the next time he's on, because he's not on today. But we are going to do the You Can Bet That segment from Sports Interaction. As always, 19 plus, we ask that you please play responsibly. And there is a link to responsible gaming strategies in the description of the show. So with McDavid, that topic in the rear view for a second, let's broaden it out for the entirety of the Battle of Alberta. I'm still pretty surprised that we've seen as many goals as we've seen and the Flames are behind. Because for a good chunk of this year, we looked at the Flames as a team who was playoff ready and they would be able to go far this year. And the Oilers, through different reasons, maybe not necessarily the team ready to make that jump to the next level. One game could change everything. We're speaking hours before game four, but the fact that the Oilers have the series advantage that they have, we've been able to focus on them the last few days. I still think it's a bit surprising to see that they've been as dominant as they've have been offensively between McDavid, Draisaitl, Zach Hyman, I know has stepped up at different points. I know Evander Kane has also stepped up at different points as well. And Mike Smith has been the best goalie in this series, not even Jacob Markstrom. The Oilers have taken it to the Flames through the first three games.
They have. And look, we actually talked about this late in the regular season. Like Mike Smith had a phenomenal end of the year. And I know it was certainly an up and down year. He was injured at the start, you know, had some not great performance at times, but the end of his season was really strong. And I remember I think it was an Ask CJ question we might've taken. Someone asked like, is there a dark horse team? And I said Edmonton, because, you know, Mike Smith has not been played too much and generally goalies that play a lot of games have trouble keeping the performance going through the playoffs. And he just finished hot. Now I didn't feel super confident about that, but I was thinking that could be a team. If they get goaltending, it wouldn't surprise me to see Edmonton go on a run. And that's kind of what's happened. I mean, Mike Smith's given them good goaltending, even right through that LA series. That was a tightly played series. And Edmonton found a way to win game 6 and 7 and get through. But I think he was at 930 save percentage in that series. So with goaltending, this Oilers team is downright scary. And that's what you've seen so far. Now, how long does that hold up? Very much an open question. You know, Mike Smith is roughly my age, which, you know, Julian, being an avid listener of this pod means that he doesn't have a lot of time left in the NHL just because of where he's at in his career. And so, you know, but as long as he sustains it, they got a chance to go on a run. And so, you know, that all being said, I'm not counting Calgary to the series at all. Like, I think this still feels like 7 games to me. This feels like punch, counterpunch kind of series. I still think the Flames are built for playoff success. They're only down 2-1 in a series. You know, Tampa was down 2-1 to the Leafs and 3-2 and won its series. And now is already into the Eastern Conference final. And so, you know, I could definitely see Calgary coming back and winning this one. But, you know, Edmonton probably has been a pleasant surprise, really, for me, the goaltending and defensive play, being able to, you know, they got tagged for 9 in game one. So it's sort of a strange comment to make. But, you know, since that point, they've been able to keep the Flames in check and still break through against, you know, Calgary team that really didn't give up a lot of goals, doesn't give up a lot of slot shots typically. Like does all the process results you'd look for the Flames in the regular season suggest that they'd be designed to win 2-1 in type of games. And that's what they got in the first round against Dallas. It's been a little different gameplay here against Edmonton. And so I would think as they look to go forward in the series, they're looking to have tighter checking games. I think that probably favors them. But, you know, maybe Connor McDavid, Kane, Dreisaitl, all these guys have different ideas.
I'm wondering, like, because the Flames are built to be aggressive forecheckers and play those tight games, like, why has this series been as open as it has? Like, how is, like, even in game one, I understand the Flames put up 9 on the Oilers. Connor McDavid still had like a 4-point night. It was better than anyone on that ice in terms of points. Like, how have the Oilers been able to take advantage of the space allotted to them? Why is it at that point?
Well, game one to me was really bad goaltending, honestly. Like obviously there's defensive miscues in that game, but there was like a lot of shots that just like went straight through, like Jacob Markstrom, Koskinen actually played pretty well when he came in for Smith, but you know, Smith let in a bad couple goals and was pulled early in that game. Like it just, that was a weird night. Like, I don't know that's not a game we can really pull a lot of trends out of. Maybe if we're looking for one reason why this series has been more offensive is one team has seemed to be able to build a big lead. And obviously when you get a lead in a playoff game, like by 2 or 3 goals, the other team has to start taking more chances, start doing things to create offense. And I think you've seen some of that, like just not much of this series has been played close. You know, that's typically what I think of playoff hockey. Like one team gets ahead 1-0 and is not pressing. The other team's trying to break through and it's very tense and back and forth. And obviously maybe power plays come in and change it a little bit, but this series has just been more lopsided. And, you know, Mike Smith played great in game 3. So, you know, that was also a deciding factor in terms of why it's been wide open. But, you know, I don't feel like it's going to be wide open right through the end. I just think at some point this is going to revert to where the stakes are so high, unless maybe the superstars just have a different exclamation point to put on the series, make it play out differently than we'd expect. But, you know, I just think it's tough, even as much as he's done it through 10 games, to expect Connor McDavid to have 2+ points a game. You know, just guys don't do that. Like that happened in the 80s, but that does not happen. You know, like Sidney Crosby's best playoff years were not that. You know, Evgeny Malkin in his prime, Patrick Kane, you know, all the great offensive players that have had great playoffs that have won Conn Smythe trophies. These guys are getting 30 points in like 20 to 24 games while winning a cup. You know, McDavid's going to get there like by the third round at this pace, at this rate. And that's hard to put your brain around. And I think that because of that, I guess we haven't just seen close games yet in the series.
I know the Oilers and the Avs Blue series not done yet, but if we get Edmonton, Colorado, I just want to let myself kind of get ahead of myself for a moment. If we get Edmonton, Colorado, are we not in for a really fun Western Conference final? The speed, the pace, the talent, the star power, like I'm dreaming of it.
Well, you should. I mean, and just having McKinnon and McDavid is two of the absolute best players in the world on the same ice, plus Dreisaitl. So like just that alone, having two absolute superstars in their prime going head to head would be awesome. You know, what's funny with that potential series, and very much a potential at this point in time, is Edmonton was one of the teams that played Colorado well during the regular season. And as much as, you know, Colorado really, almost nobody played them well. I mean, they were a dominant team this year, one of the best, if not the best in the league, by pretty much every measure, other than points. I know Florida got them by a couple points, but, you know, Edmonton would go into that series with some confidence, I think, that they have a recipe that is difficult for the Avs to handle. And so, yeah, I think it would be strength on strength, offensively played. You know, maybe a goaltender has something to say in a couple of the games, but I do think that would be a high scoring series. I just don't see Calgary designed to play that way. And that's why I do think this one will get more tighter checking as it goes along and get, you know, lower scores and those types of things. But man, Oilers Avalanche would have high possibility for 6-5 type of games, big performances from the big players. And look, I mean, a week or so from now, we're going to know if we'll get that, but it looks very possible at this point in time.
Absolutely. I want to talk about the Panthers now. It's time for us to come to grips with the fact that the bet that was placed partway through the year did not come to fruition. And there it is for those watching on YouTube. CJ is flashing the $100 ticket. The Panthers, +600 to win the Stanley Cup. But unfortunately, that will not happen. There it goes. Ripped.
You got to rip this one up, bud.
Yeah.
Not meant to be. The CJ show is not having a steak dinner on the backs of the Florida Panthers success, but we'll move on.
I was really looking forward to that steak dinner too, but
we're not going to have a night out like the one they apparently had in Tampa either. So
no.
Unconfirmed reports. So we can't
allegedly. I was on another podcast that we kind of joked about that. And you know, Tic-Tac-Toe, obviously. We were all kind of making jokes about it. And at one point he mentioned that the Florida Panthers were getting clapped in each of the games played, but he didn't realize what the story was. He just used the word clapped. So then when we told him what was going on, he was so shocked. He said,
clapped. Unconfirmed reports.
Unconfirmed, allegedly, sprinkle allegedly all over. But the Panthers, they did fall flat. The best team they've ever produced. The Tampa Bay Lightning have run through two teams who have gone through the greatest regular seasons they have ever had and beat them both in two completely different ways. And the Florida Panthers, with the season that they had, the talent that they had, the acquisitions that they made to go out in four. Wow.
Didn't see that coming. I mean, look, they got Vasilevsky too, though. Like, if we're being honest, I think the expected goals for the Panthers in the series was something like 13 and they scored three. So Vasilevsky saved 10 expected goals based on like the quality of chances Florida had. Clearly it's a different series if they got 10 more goals in those four games, that they would have won a couple of them, I would think, if not more. It wasn't all goaltending though. I mean, I give the Lightning credit. Like, these guys, they figured something out. You know, they swept that series without Braden Point, remember, injured in game seven against Toronto. You know, still don't know if we're going to see him again the rest of the playoffs. But I mean, to go and sweep a series against the President's Trophy winners after losing one of your best players, you know, that's quite something in and of itself. I think they just have, for the Lightning, it's a mindset. I mean, obviously it's skill. Like, we saw Nikita Kucherov, to me, in this series show a lot more than he did against the Leafs. I know he had a bunch of assists in that series against Toronto, but I didn't come away from any of those games going like, wow, Kucherov was dominant. But he was outright dominant in games in this series and made big game-twisting plays. You know, you saw some of the depth players still come through. Corey Perry scored for Tampa. I know Ross Colton had big game one. I mean, they're just finding it right down the lineup. And I really do think it's a playoff mentality that they find a way to, no matter what the circumstances are, whether it's a crazy penalty game, whether injuries pile up, whether they're tied, whether like they play a certain way, and then they have, you know, probably the world's best goaltender behind them, which I think helps a ton. So, you know, I have nothing but respect for Tampa. I think everyone should anyway. Like, even had they lost to Toronto, what a run they've had, right? But now they're two more series down, like 10 series in a row they've won. They've now played 10 playoff series where they haven't lost consecutive games at all at any point during that time.
Holy crap.
You know, they're going to play either Carolina or the Rangers in round three. I think they'd be favored in both series. They're going to get a little bit of a layoff, which sometimes can be bad in terms of ruining a mojo. But I think with how much hockey they've played, with the fact that they got some injuries, that's going to help them. And three Stanley Cups in a row is very much in play all of a sudden, right? Like, they're in the final four. We don't know who the other final three will be just yet, but we know they're one of the final four teams again standing. And I just, every sort of more wrinkle we get, I just look back, like 2015 loss in the cup final, 2016 game seven of the conference final, 2018 game seven of the conference final, they lost, then won the cups in 2020, 21, maybe 2022. I mean, all of a sudden, like, they really have a case that we might consider them a better team even than the Crosby Penguins of this era. And the Kane and Taves, you know, Chicago teams. Like, it's possible, and I wouldn't have thought it would be probable, that they're going to come away as the team of this era. Now, they still got some work to do. It's not a slam dunk. Just because you sweep one series doesn't mean you sweep the next one. But, man, they're in great position to win a third straight Stanley Cup. And I don't think any of us could have thought we'd see that from any team.
And on top of that, the Lightning have had to manage keeping salaries all together in a salary cap era. And they've had to go through quite a few hijinks to get to that point. And for people who...
Hijinks.
Yeah, hijinks. Or maybe, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just, I couldn't think of a better word, I guess. And for people who like to use the COVID bubble and everything else with the pandemic as something that should take away from the Lightning, that should add on to what is going on. We had games play through a pandemic and the Lightning still won back-to-back Stanley Cups. Like, that should not be a deterrent to a team's success. I think the case has already been made that they are the team of the salary cap era.
I think the bubble cup was harder to win than a normal cup. And I, not that I think a normal cup's easy to win, but like, you know, part of the excitement of the playoffs is like coming home and having the energy in the building and all that stuff. Like, these guys spent 63 days literally living behind fences, like actual fences in Toronto first and in Edmonton when they moved, you know, living the same day over and over and over again, eating probably the same food. Like, anyone who's done anything for like 60 straight days, even if it's something cool, like playing hockey, like, that's a mental challenge. And to find a way through that and win their first cup, remember, they weren't winners at that point. Like, they were a team that you felt like couldn't get over the hump, and they faced some tough series. You know, the Islanders conference final wasn't easy. Even Dallas in the final made it a little harder on them, and they found a way to win that cup. And then they come back and win a more normal cup, although it was in a strange year, you know, 2021 season, where it was all interdivisional play during the regular season, you know. And then now we're back to what I would call a normal year, and they're still the best team. I mean, I don't know what they could possibly do. I don't put any asterisks on the bubble, put it that way. You know, I was in the bubble in a reporting standpoint, and it was a freaking grind. It sucked, if I'm being totally honest. And I love what I do for a living. So it sucked what I was doing. I can't imagine it was that much fun for them. It was a lot of fun when they got to the end and they got the big shiny silver thing to party with and got to fly home and see their families again. But that must have been a real struggle. And I'm sure actually over time, you're going to hear some real great stories. Like, once enough time passes where those guys can be honest about how hard that was. I got nothing but respect for that team. They've won more regular season games than anyone. They've won more playoff games than anyone. And they've now won 10 straight playoff series. They have zero to prove to anybody, in my opinion.
You mentioned Andre Vasilevskiy too. Like, in that first round series against the Leafs, we were starting to wonder, oh man, like, he's not looking the same. He's allowing all those goals. And he even allowed the one in game 7. Round 2, especially in that game 4, he reminded everyone who he is. And there is no other goalie in the NHL who you would rather have in a closeout game than Andre Vasilevskiy.
Did you see the stops he made at the end when Florida had the goalie pulled? Like,
oh yeah.
I can't remember who had the chance, but it's right at the side of his crease. It would be easy if it got sort of forgotten because Tampa immediately went down and got the empty net goal right after to seal the game. But like, he made a ridiculous stop, right? The guy he's unbeatable. He's a big goalie. He's athletic. And now he's got the aura, right? He's got the Patrick Waugh aura. He's got like the Martin Brodeur aura. Carey Price at his height. And I know Carey didn't win a cup, but like, those guys that have won, and that it's almost like the shooters he's got the shooters thinking before they shoot about what they're going to do. And I think that's a special place to get to. And, you know, if we see more of this, and I think getting him extra rest, honestly, is maybe the most important thing. Because he has played a ton in the regular season, obviously going through those playoff runs, he played all the playoff games the last 2 years. Getting him a little bit of a mental and physical rest before the third round, I think, is huge. Because that was a tough series against Toronto, and he came up big in game 7, but you're right, he looked gettable the whole series. Like, I was, two of my biggest surprises watching that through a Lightning lens was that I didn't find Kucherov to be that dominant at 5-on-5. And I thought that Vasilevskiy looked tired or just off, or, you know, he was letting in goals you weren't used to seeing go through him. And so, you know, the fact that now the monster has been reawoken and he's getting some time to lick his wounds. I mean, it's going to be a tough challenge for whichever of New York or Carolina gets through and has to face him next.
I want to mention the Panthers again here. I know a lot of people have brought up the statistic that I think the last time they had been shut out in a game was game 6 of their series against Tampa last year. But another stat I want to bring up, my good buddy Ben Raby put this out there. Panthers held to one goal or less 3 times this past year, held to one goal or less 4 times, all 4 times in the second round series, against Tampa. Like, this is like, we did not see it coming that they would get swept, but the fact that they could not score, the fact that they could not produce on the power play, people, the players like Aaron Ekblad, who are supposed to be among the best of their position, had moments where they just look like pylons. Like, I'm thinking of that move that Kucherov put on him in game one. Like, yeah, the Panthers looked very mortal in that series, and they were done and dusted in four, and I still can't believe it.
It's a hard trophy to win, brother. Like, this is it, because it can get away from you quickly, right? I mean, we even saw that great Tampa team that won all the games, 60 games or whatever, get swept by Columbus that year. Like, if you get going the wrong way, it can be hard to find your way back. The path to Florida losing this series, we probably would have thought of just defensively, they started springing leaks all over the place. And yet they lost a couple really close games where they just needed a goal or two, and maybe, they're still playing today. And so, yeah, it's a tough one to figure, other than the fact, of course, they had almost 50 shots in game four, and Vasilevsky was huge. I mean, sometimes you got to tip your hat to the other team, to the other goaltender, things of that nature. I don't think Florida has to totally rethink their program, although they've now got, they've got a tough offseason ahead. Carter Verhaeghe and Alexander Barkov have raises kicking in. They've just traded a first-round pick for Ben Chiarot and Claude, another first for Claude Giroux at the deadline. Those guys are pending UFAs. I mean, it's going to be tough to bring this team back or find ways to improve it. Although one area I think Bill Zito as a GM has shown himself to be very good is finding value, getting players that aren't maybe obvious names or big salaries that make an impact. But, they're going to have a difficult summer to a certain degree to try to get better, but they're going to be a force again next year in the Atlantic Division, I would think. And man, we're going to fast forward 12 months and we're going to be talking about some version of Toronto, Tampa, and Florida battling again. I think I don't see any reason why any of those three teams won't be back at the top of the standings next year too.
Any quick thoughts on Carolina and the Rangers series? And we don't want to completely exclude it from all the other playoff talk that we've had.
What a weird playoffs for the Hurricanes, right? They're 6-0 on home ice, I think it is, and 0-4 now on the road.
Exactly.
Heading into their game four in Madison Square Garden. Interesting to see Frederik Andersen appear at practice the other day. His injury has lingered, I think, longer than the team might have thought. A little bit eerily similar to what he went on in Toronto last year, where he dealt with a lingering knee issue for a long, long period of time. They couldn't figure out what exactly was wrong. There's nothing structurally wrong that the imaging showed, but he couldn't get comfortable in the net. And so that's not a good sign. It doesn't fill you with confidence if the goaltender feels off and you're not sure what it is. But the fact he's back at practice is a great sign, because the best Hurricanes team we saw this year, when they were at their best, he was their goaltender. He had a fantastic season, Frederik Andersen. They've played with two different goaltenders already in this playoffs. I would think at some point now we're going to see him, Andersen, get in. When you use three goalies in a playoffs, usually that's not a good sign. But I think in this case, could bode well for Carolina. And we'll see if this continues to be a homer series. Kind of strange to see the way it's played out so far. But I know the Rangers really felt like those games one and two, even though they lost both of them, that they were there in every way that you'd want to be there in those games. And so... This has the makings of a seven gamer to me, and all the while Tampa gets to chill for a few days and watch them battle each other and get ready for round three.
You managed to fulfill our Rangers minute quota on the podcast as well with that analysis. Great job, Christopher Johnston.
Thank you. Thursday we're gonna have a lot of Rangers, I think, because there's gonna be no Tampa to talk about at that point. Nothing new will have happened.
That is very true. It is time for Ask CJ. Normally, we would do this on the Monday. Normally, we'd have a podcast on the Monday, but holiday, right? It's Tuesday. So we're going to do Ask CJ. You good?
I'm good. I'm just getting ready for the CJ questions.
I love it. I love it, man. All right, let's go through some of these questions.
Big Tuesday energy, brother.
Oh, I love the Big Tuesday energy. This one is from Stéphane Dangel on Twitter. You're currently 1-0 in your staying or going predictions for the Leafs. How you feel? This is obviously in reference to Mark Giordano taking a very generous hometown discount over the weekend.
Well, I'm just giving it 110%, taking it one prediction at a time, trying to keep my mind in small places. So I'm not getting too high or too low at this point in time. But, it is nice to start see something good bounce my way, and you know, we'll see how it all goes. But for being honest, predicting that Mark Giordano staying in Toronto was one of the easier ones, or one of the ones I felt was more certain. And so some of the other players I had to make a call on, I don't feel quite as strongly about. So let's revisit this when there's a more going on. But 1-0 is a good place to start. As anyone who's been following along closely, though, my predictions when it comes to these playoff series have not been very good at all. And so hopefully I get a little bit better rating with the staying or going Toronto Maple Leafs version from the STP podcast.
Mm-hmm. Next question from actually, it's not really a question from James Myrtle here. It just says black olives on pizza.
That's a hard no for me, but
thank you. That's not something you want on pizza.
James obviously thinks that's an elite pizza topping. You know, I prefer to go with some version of, you know, maybe mushrooms, pepperoni, a little bacon crumble, something like that. That's in my wheelhouse. I don't mind peppers on a pizza, but black olives I generally avoid anywhere, but especially on my pizza.
Tell everyone where you get your pizza from, CJ.
Pizza Pizza.
Yes, sir. Not an ad, just wanted to shout Pizza Pizza.
Maybe this week I'll have some Pizza Pizza. Live my best life. Maybe get it for a Battle of Alberta night. Post up with some garlic dipping sauce, a little Pizza Pizza, and watch some good old Canadian hockey. That sounds like you could do worse than that for, May night.
Absolutely. Again, not an ad. From Devils Insiders on Twitter, who's on the list that GM Tom Fitzgerald would trade his second overall draft pick for?
Well, I don't think that's a long list. You know, look, this isn't thought to be maybe the strongest draft, or there's not necessarily a consensus. You know, there's a group of players at the top of the draft that are viewed well, but I think if you ask different scouting staffs, you might get a different top three or four players, the way they might be ranked, the order. But we don't see teams trade the second overall pick. And I know the Devils maybe are in a different spot because they've moved up a couple times in recent memory and been able to draft those guys. I think that's a pick the Devils are basically making. I mean, you don't come out and say that before July 7th. There's no reason to, right? I mean, maybe if Ken Holland picks up the phone and says, hey, we'll give you Connor McDavid for the second overall pick. Well, of course, that's not a long thought process or conversation. So there are players in the league they would trade it for. But generally, the players they would trade it for just aren't available. And so I would be stunned if the Devils aren't picking at number two after Les Canadiens pick number one on July 7th. And so I don't have a lot of names to toss your way, because the kind of players you would consider trading the number two pick overall for, I just don't see getting dealt this offseason. I mean, like, who are we talking about getting dealt this year? A guy like Kevin Fiala, you know, appears is on his way out of Minnesota, you know, coming off a $5 million plus contract, and he's an RFA. They have a cap crunch looming with the Suter and Parise buyouts. You know, it just seems to me that he's going to be on his way out. I could actually see New Jersey being one of the teams that takes a look at Fiala. You know, Ottawa's been linked to him as well. But, you know, I don't think they're trading the second overall pick for him, for example. So I don't know who's on that list that you can actually get. And so it's almost a moot point.
I can't wait until free agent frenzy when you start mentioning some of these players and where they're linked to. It's going to be a really frenetic time.
We're not quite there yet, right? July 13th, free agency. Like, I've started to actually put my mind towards it, you know, since the end of round one. I've been sort of refreshing who is a free agent, trying to figure out the marketplace and things that would go. But it's still a little early. You know, what, 7-8 weeks is – It's a little far off. Like, we don't know yet. Like, are Malkin and Letang actually going to hit free agency? Pittsburgh's talking to them, going to attempt to sign them. You know, Johnny Gaudreau probably would be the prime free agent if he does become a free agent. You know, obviously no negotiations going on with him and the Flames in a playoff series, but, you know, does he hit the market? I mean, it hasn't taken full shape what that market will be, but it's going to be a fun summer, I think. And I think there's going to be more trade activity. We saw a lot of trades last year, remember, around the draft. But with a flat salary cap, I just think that the same thing's going to happen again. And we're going to have a pretty exciting summer hot stove session here with when it comes to trading and signing and all the things that are going to go on in July.
I cannot wait. Next question from Stinkface M. Who would win in a fight, TSN Chris or CJ Show Chris? They are not the same person.
CJ Show Chris, hands down. That's the more uncorked version. I think CJ showed Chris is more likely to fight dirty if necessary to.
He's going to start doing this shit
to get the job done. You know, TSN Chris is wearing a suit. He's not wearing a bear hat. I think CJ showed Chris is going to channel his inner bear in said fight and give TSN Chris too much to handle.
I'm just picturing you fighting, just throwing
fighting myself. Bakers.
Yeah, it'd just be like this weird, like trying to think of movies where we've seen people fight themselves. Like that would be a really interesting combat. Anyway, insider Jay Money, big fan of yours, obviously. At what moment did you know you wanted to become a journalist insider? I think he directed it towards both of us. At what moment did you know when you wanted to become a journalist / insider? What are your goals for the short and long-term future for you?
Well, for me, it started when I was 5 years old, of all things. So I'm a little bit not in the normal breed of, you know, I just started saying to my parents I was going to become a hockey journalist. And I never really veered from that path, like in any serious way. I just kept working towards that, you know, kept that as a goal. I had no idea how I was going to achieve it, of course, when I was really young. Didn't have any sort of ins into the industry, but, you know, ended up going to Ryerson University and the rest is history. You know, as a result of the fact that my career has gone kind of, it's probably gone even better. Like I didn't let myself imagine all of this. Like when I was a kid, I was just thinking I wanted to get into NHL games for free, get to know the players, get to know how things work. You know, I didn't necessarily imagine, you know, spending 4 years on Hockey Night in Canada doing the TV work I've done, now launching this podcast and have that go so well. I mean, I'm truly blessed. So, you know, this will be hard to say because, you know, I know we've talked in the past about, like, I think goal making and goal setting is really important. And I would urge anyone to do it in any walk of life. It's not related to our profession. I think writing them down, there's a certain power to it. But I'm in this stage of my career where I don't really have a whole lot of goals pursuant to my career because I've already so far, I've sort of taken this farther than I would have guessed. I still want to keep it going, of course. I'm very driven. I still work hard. I still love it. But, you know, I don't have like, I'm not looking to make X amount of money or get to this event anymore because honestly, like I've been to 15 Stanley Cup finals in a row. I mean, like what? I don't even know what more do I dream about? I guess I could say like, I want to get to 25 in a row or something, but like, even if for some reason that streak ended, I'm just going to feel tremendous gratitude that it's happened. So I don't have a lot of personal goals, but I'm midway through my career or getting towards the back half. Maybe Julian, you're younger and I know you probably got a longer list, but yeah. So for me, I just, for some reason, since I was a kid, I was drawn to this and I've been really, 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 really lucky to do it for my entire adult life.
Yeah, man. And look at you now, man. I'm proud of you, Siege. You've done really well for yourself.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah. I mean, it's surreal, honestly. Like, you know how it is when you're living anything in the moment. And look, my career, especially the previous iteration of it, was really busy. Like I was literally traveling half the days in a year. And so there's not a lot of time to reflect in a sense. Like you're doing what you got to do to keep doing it. The pandemic's given me some time. Obviously I've changed, you know, where I work and sort of my workflow has changed. And I just, I feel really, really lucky to have gotten to do this. I still want to do it though. Like I don't miss my words here. Like I love it. I'm not moving into accounting next year or something, or, you know, I'm not looking to transition, but you know, I'm also almost feel, I would feel guilty setting too many career specific goals when I've already had so much, like my cup's overflowing. So, you know, I'm just lucky that it's turned out that way. And I love the people I work with. I love the places I've worked. Like 98.999% of my colleagues have been amazing, no matter which, you know, affiliates they've worked for. I've had so many great times on the road. I've seen the world on someone else's dime. Like, man, what else could I ask for?
Yeah, you're right. I'm at a younger point in my career, so I have a lot more goals I want to achieve. I knew from a really young age myself, around like 5 or 6, that I wanted to work as a journalist or work as a sports journalist. And I've just been able to push it to this point. I'm at a point where I didn't think I'd ever be on a podcast with Chris Johnston or work with Steve Dangle or work at The Athletic. Honestly, I didn't think I'd be at a point where I'd be working with The Athletic until it happened. And I'm able to do that now. And I have all these podcasts and stuff, man. It's it's been really fun. I just want to continue to establish more credibility for myself and just be continue to interact with people in and around the league. I want to do more of that. I want to travel more and be able to visit more NHL arenas and be around more people that way. And then long term, I basically want James Duffy's job, but also I understand that with the way that the game is moving, maybe I kind of want something like what Pierre LeBrun has, or what essentially what you have, where you're able to be on TV for one outlet and then write for somewhere else. I think you guys are the way you guys have kind of have it set now. Like you're, that's something I kind of already had that in a way, but I want like an even better version of that for myself.
Well, the circumstances dictated, right? Like I didn't necessarily plan for it to go this way. I would guess Pierre didn't either. Like you have to be able to react to the industry. I think that's why it can be, I think, again, goal setting is amazing. And I think be specific with your goals, but you also have to be flexible in your goals because, you know, the way the industry looks today is very different than the one I entered, you know, in terms of the opportunities available to you. Something like this podcast just didn't exist when I graduated university in 2004. I mean, there was no version of this. This wasn't a thing, but like, you know, and we're not even early to the game. Obviously there's been lots of podcasts around for a long time, like the STP, but you know, I think you have to be open to trying new things and basically it's going to go places you can't even imagine, especially if you keep that open mind. I think that's great. The one thing I should say, the one time I almost veered off the path slightly is around a time I was finishing my undergrad degree. I started thinking maybe I should go become a lawyer. And I actually studied for and wrote the LSAT exam, which is what you need to enter law school, or at least you did at the time. I don't know if that's changed. And I did like reasonably well. And like, I probably could have got in some places, but I had a cousin, an older cousin who was already a lawyer. And by that point I'd already, you know, I was already actually a sports reporter. Like I, before I left university, I was working in the industry, you know, covering NHL games and the like. And I don't know, I guess I asked him at some point, and we saw him in the summer at my parents' house. And he was like, yeah, he's like, trust me, like being a lawyer, you can make lots of money and all this stuff. But he's like, if you love what you do, like, don't do it. I'm sure there's lots of lawyers who love their job, but like that sort of piece of advice steered me back to where I was. And so I didn't leave the track, but that was like the one alternate universe where my life could have gone in the other direction. Because, you know, I think I was like wondering, like, is it, you know, I got good grades and stuff. Like, do I, you know, maybe I should be shooting higher or something, like, is what I was thinking as a kid. I'm really glad I didn't. I think if you're doing anything that like your heart and your mind that you're aligned with, like if you love it, it, like you never feel like you're working, right? So, you know, yeah, there's other professions to make other amounts of money and stuff like that, but some people that make lots of money hate their jobs. And so like, I'm sort of rich in life experience. I'm rich in joy. I'm rich in friends that I've made through work and experiences and all that stuff. And sometimes it's not just about money, like actual dollars in your pocket. So yeah, I could have maybe chased law school, but instead here I am a journalist, which, you know, really, for being honest, you don't even need an education for. I mean, I got a journalism degree, but doing journalism is just a matter of doing it. Story time's over.
There's an alternate reality, not only where you're a lawyer, but big money CJ pulls up to his office wearing sunglasses, ready to do cases.
Well, maybe if I had to become a lawyer, though, I would have worked in an NHL front office. Like that is the one flip side, is a lot of, like, I'm obviously very interested in the CBA, and a lot of the people that do those jobs, sort of cap management or contract negotiation for teams, you know, usually assistant GM roles, you know, a lot of those people have backgrounds in law. So maybe I would have found my way into the industry that way. Like who knows? Like it's impossible to know, but I have no regrets about the way it's turned out. And you know, it is just funny to look back in your life, because lots of times you make a choice where literally it's a fork in the road and you could go one way or the other, and you got to choose one direction, but you never know where the other one would have taken you.
Two more questions for you real quick here. Turbine Turtle on Discord. What is travel like for the players? Do they have to go through security even with their private plane? Do they leave their cars at the airport or arena? Love the show. Best 30 minutes of my day.
So travel is really good for players. They every team travels charter. So players can park generally at the charter terminals. You know, they don't fly into the main terminal necessarily that you see when you go on your own commercial flights. they do have to go through security, just as anyone who charters a private plane would have to do. They have to clear customs when they cross the border. I believe customs officials generally just come on the plane though. When a team like the Leafs or the Canadians flying home, when they land back at the local airport, the customs official comes through and you know, clears them that way. But it's a pretty charmed way to fly. There's catered meals, you know, wider seats on some of them and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it still looks a little bit like what we do, but everything's done for them, more or less. And I think they get to skip a lot of lines along the way.
Last one from It's Time 33. CJ, do you ever talk to the refs after the game? And why don't we see more of these comments published? I think I remember you saying earlier that one media member was allowed to talk to the refs after each game.
Yeah, so not in a formal way can we interview referees. I think there's a mechanism in place where if there's a really controversial call, we can request what's called a pool reporter, which is where we send one representative for all the media to go and ask a few questions and then share those quotes equally among all the news organizations versus, you know, having a scrum of 15 people grilling a referee. It's a one-on-one conversation explaining maybe something that happened. And so, no, I don't interview referees very often. I know a few referees because they tend to stay at the same hotels as reporters or we frequent the same places. So I know some to chat with them more informally. But, you know, we don't get to interview referees in any formal way. And I've actually never interviewed a referee formally during my career. So any referees, I know it's more just through social things, similar lifestyle, taking the same flights, staying at the same Marriott, you know, eating breakfast in the same Marriott concierge lounge or what have you, but not through the official duties of the job.
Okay. So for the longest while, I was under the assumption, or I was under the belief that the pool reporter option with referees was not available to NHL reporters. So you're saying it is a thing.
I can't remember when it's last happened, but I know it's happened like in the last couple of years. And so, yeah, it's possible, but you know, I think it's not used a lot. It's certainly not like you don't just have a normal game. And let's say there's a lot of penalties called and then you go like, why did you call 13 minors tonight or something? Like it's more if there's something really controversial or something that needs further context or explanation that you see that done. But it's happened in recent memory, but I can't recall the exact game or circumstance.
Okay. And with that, that does it for our Tuesday edition of the Chris Johnston Show. Big Money Siege. Great job as always.
Glad I didn't become a lawyer. That our law podcast would be nowhere near as good as this.
I would have no idea how to go about doing a law podcast. It would have been beyond me. You would not see me there. I don't think Steve Dangle would even get involved in that. But anyway, we appreciate the fact that you took the path that you took to become one of the best hockey insiders in the game and decided to do a podcast along the way. We really appreciate that from everyone at the SDPN and all the fans of the show. We all sincerely appreciate that. We sincerely appreciate you, viewers and watchers and listeners of the podcast, very, very much. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts if you don't already subscribe. Also subscribe to the SDPN YouTube page and subscribe to the SDPN Discord. For CJ, I'm Julian. So long. Peace. We'll be back on Thursday with a brand new episode.
The Chris Johnston Show.
Powered by Sports Interaction. Canada's Sportsbook.
Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter at Reporter Chris. And follow Jillian McKenzie at JK McKenzie.
The Chris Johnston Show.